Hey, triathlon trainiacs, Taryn here, coming to you solo. This interview that I did is with Chris Fortune, the founder of Ceres Group. Now, Ceres, you might better know as PowerTap, Cyclops, Ceres Bike Hitches. They have a number of brands. They've been around since the 80s when Chris and his wife Sarah actually bought a company that they turned into what we all know now as the provider of, say, my P1 PowerTap pedals. Very interesting company. I met with them down at Interbike and I was solo, so unfortunately NTK was not involved with this interview. Talking to Chris, we get into why he decided to purchase Graber Products, which is what the company was originally, why he decided to do that as opposed to starting a business, how he started out riding bikes, delivering papers in Chicago winters without any studded tires. I feel for you, man. I feel for you very, very deeply. And notably, we actually get into, this kind of shocked me. I wasn't expecting this, but I was really into it, having recently got into meditation, how Chris has started including meditation practices in their management meetings and basically their overall company philosophy. Really, really interesting stuff. And then finally, we talk about where he sees the industry going in bikes and indoor trainers and power and like all that high-tech stuff that we were seeing at Interbike and where PowerTap is coming in to meet demand and do the right thing for their customer. Hope you enjoy the interview, everyone. We're here with Chris Fortune, the founder of Ceres. And why don't you start by explaining Ceres, because Ceres has a lot of consumer-facing brands, and give us the quick 2 or 3 minute spiel on all of your brands and the categories that you're in.
So my wife and I bought Graber Products in 1989. And we were looking at kind of how do we recreate who we were then and who the company was and how do we venture into the future with kind of a modern approach to marketing and communication and design. Design is very, very important to us. We have an Italian designer in Bologna, Italy that we've been working with for over 20 years to help us design great looking functional product.
And is this Fabio Pedrini?
It is Fabio. Okay. Fabio Pedrini.
And he's designed a number of products.
He's been involved in a number of our categories with trainers and with Raxmore. And just has given us this flair and this design that things look right. It's like our new hammer product. We wanted it to look great in the home, like a piece of furniture. And it's all aluminum, it's really lightweight, but it looks really, really good. And so design is really important to us. And so if people were gonna, our customers or consumers out there, if they're gonna put product in their homes, we want them to be really proud of what they have with us. So Ceres came from, my wife is really smart. She's a marketing genius in a lot of ways, but when we're looking for what we're gonna name the company moving forward, she spent a lot of time looking at it, and we hired namesmiths to come up with different names. And we got together when we were a lot smaller in a room with sticky notes to come up with different names. And in the end, she merged my name and her name together. She's Sarah and I'm Chris, and that's where Ceres comes from.
And she got on there first.
And she should have, because the way she tells it, if Chris was first, it would be Chris ass.
Yeah, nobody would buy from Chris ass.
No, I don't think so. I think we'd be done, right?
So what are all the consumer brands now that you've got out in dealers that people might be familiar with?
Well, we have Ceres, which is primarily products that go off the rear of the vehicle to transport bikes on strap-on trunk racks and hitch racks, hanging and platform racks. And then we also have Ceres Parking, where we're into bicycle infrastructure, indoor and outdoor bicycle parking. And then we bought a company called Bike Fix Station, where they provide end of trail solutions for outdoor pumps, repair stands. And then one of the things that's really important to me personally is creating safer places for people to ride their bikes. So we've been working with technology to create these separated lanes. What is a green lane? How do we create safe places for people to ride their bike? And so we have some new product that's coming, both that's solar, that lights guided bike paths, and then lane dividers that separates the consumer with the cars on roads. And wow. And then we partner with the city of LA and a company called Gensler Architect to come up with a design that we can put in on ground that can be used temporarily if they choose to try different bike paths and separated bike paths to create this guide for consumers to use the bikes on the road.
Okay, and finally, PowerTap is what.
Well, so my that's followers. Why we're here, right? What PowerTap? You know, it's all about. You know, in the beginning with PowerTap, that's a MIT design developed solution that started in the hub. And so we had some brilliant people that were core to the original designs. And we started with the hub, and we're probably on our fifth generation of technology in the rear of the hub. We were the first company to do ANT wireless from the hub to the computer. And the problem with ANT originally, it was really not designed to go through water as a signal. And your body is 90% right fluid, right? Something like that. Is
okay.
That,
yeah, I don't know. Somewhere around
there. Some depends. Significant, right?
If you're so in Vegas, our original, maybe 60.
I don't know, whatever it is. But it's, you know, so it wasn't designed to go through water. And so there was initial challenges to create wireless communication from the hub to the, everything was wired at that time. And we were the first to do that. And so we had all this vast experience in developing technology in the hub that's now in the pedal and the crank that gives the consumers different choices on depending on where they want to calculate power on the bike.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. What my followers would be most familiar with that I think is a phenomenal product and probably one of the only ones that's really getting it right in the power pedals is your P1. Because it's so simple to move over from one bike to the next. It's consistent. The recalibration is quick. It's easy. It's consumer friendly. And I see the friends of mine that are using the competitors and they have just nightmares moving, even just reassembling the same bike when they go to a triathlon. And I've been really pleased with the PowerTap, the P1 power pedals. But that's all here and now today. I'd like to kind of take it back to one thing that I've heard a lot from, say, you know, your cohorts, people in a similar situation in other bicycle industry companies, is that had they known how tough the bike industry would be back when they started in it, that they wouldn't have gone into it. What were you doing before 1989 that made you want to buy a company and move into the bike industry?
So we were living in Springfield, Missouri at the time, and I was running a business for another family, and we were in the distribution business in the outdoor power marketplace, and we wanted to get closer to our families in Green Bay and Chicago. And so we were looking for a business to buy up there. We're looking to relocate. And I love marketing. I love, you know, understanding the consumer and getting consumer insights on what is needed in the marketplace. And I had a chance to spend some time doing that when I was running this distribution company. And so when we were looking for a business to buy, Graber Products at that time, 1989, wasn't for sale. And it really fit kind of my skill sets, what I'm looking for. I really believe very strongly in manufacturing product in the United States, North America. We take great pride in that. We build PowerTap, Cyclops, and Cirrus inside there. We have 200 employees. We're doing it here.
All here in the United States?
Not 98% here, but all the Cirrus racks are here. Most of the Cyclops trainers are done here. Anything we can do with metal fabrication, stamping, bending, piercing, robotics, welding, we do here. We do all the calibration here. And so we want to, it's kind of like this buy local, get back to the community, try and make a difference in the marketplace, do great stuff, and just have fun doing it.
And that was, so if you had to pick one mission that you had when you started, you bought Graber in 89 and very quickly within a couple of years started getting into some fairly iconic bike rack designs. What was the mission that you said, okay, we're going to buy this company, we're going to build it into a North American manufacturing
powerhouse, if you want to pick that word. Did you have the intention of building it into what it is now, right then?
I don't know that you could see that from where I was at then. You know, I came out of a situation that, you know, I learned a lot of, you know, business from people that I worked at in different situations. And when I bought my own business, or Sarah and I bought the business, to us, it was about doing things the right way. And so it's really creating a foundation for, we're more tribal than corporate, right? It's not family and it's not corporate, it's tribal, because everybody has a responsibility within the organization to pull their weight to drive the business forward. And so we treat people with the respect internally in the organization, externally, we try and do the right thing for our people, the community, and the customers. That's kind of the driver for us. And we think if you're doing the right thing, things will definitely work out.
What's an example of some of those right things that you, decided early on that were going to be cornerstones of how you're going to manage the company?
Well, I just think it's, I think it's, I don't want to say it's biblical, but it's, you know, it's, I have a Catholic upbringing, if we want to get into, you know, that kind of stuff, but it's just doing the right thing, you know, treat other people that you want to be treated, and do things in a way that you would want to be expected as a consumer or customer out there, or dealer, right? It's just, it's finding the win-win in the partnerships that we have with the people, and doing things in a straight up, honest way. And if, you know, if a customer has a problem with the product out there, we want to know about it. We want to make it right. Very simple with that.
You hear about folks like you, that this sounds like a story that you hear from a lot of people, that they were raised on the premise that a handshake is a handshake and your word is your bond. Is that something that was part of your upbringing that you can look back on now and say, you know what, that how I was raised there had an effect on how you have built the company?
For sure. You know, I look at my dad as, you know, and as he got older, we were best friends, and I, you know, he taught us to look people in the eye when you talk to them and shake their hand, you know, and your word was your bond. It's just the right thing to do. And that goes back with just being honorable and having integrity in what you do.
So let's go. You bought the company in 89. And what was the first foray into making something, let's say, revolutionary, that was a really purposeful design that you were going to make a splash in the bike industry?
I think the first design that we did with a product called the Bones Rack, it was an Italian design product that was that's still relevant today. It's just it was more of a piece of art that was created than a rack. And I can remember driving a sample down the road, and the looks that we got from the consumers looking at this, because it was a total change of direction of, you know, products that look like lawn furniture on the back of your car. It really had the lines, the flow, the feel. It looked like it was a beautiful solution. And we sold over 1 million of those Bones Racks, 2 and 3 bikes. And
really?
Yeah.
So this was designed by your partner?
Fabio Pedrini.
Fabio Pedrini in
Bologna, Italy.
Was this early 90s? Is that right? Yeah. What did it look like? Can you describe how it looked?
So Fabio's Bones Rack was different. It was it was the first time that anybody used gas-filled injection molding in the bike industry. And what gas-filled does, it takes a plastic part and it puts a air pocket inside the tube, the plastic it's molded, it comes out molded, but there's gas inside the center of the tube, which actually makes it stronger. Because if it's a solid piece of plastic, or then it doesn't have the strength of a tube.
Because a tube can flex a little bit?
Well, no, because it has the internal walls to support the shape of the part.
Mm.
And so it's immensely strong, but it took on a shape that was arc designed, and it had a beautiful finish on it, and it looked complete. In the center of this rack is an aluminum extrusion that's just beautiful, and the arms and legs rotate around it. So it's very simple, and it's very logical the way the product works. And then the feet, it's a rubber molded foot that touches the car, and it's designed to do that. It's not an added thought.
Okay. And this comes off of the like a trailer hitch, or it comes off the rear hitch?
No, this is a strap on the rack that goes on the back of either a sedan, hatchback, flatback vehicle.
Okay, okay.
It's called the Bones.
How did it get received by the public when it came out?
You know, initially it was so different than everything else, and it brought attention to itself.
Yeah, and often that comes with ridicule, I find that.
Well, there's some of that. You got to break through, you know, and then it's just, it proved out to be very dependent in fitting vehicles and bicycles. And it had the shape and the design which allowed it to fit almost any car out there or vehicle. So there's a real advantage to that. And it was lightweight, durable, it didn't rust.
How long did it take for the people to really get on board with it?
You know, it took a few years, but we've been at it a long time. And so it's a very iconic design. We've improved it over the years. And it's, you know, it continues to be very strong for us.
And still on the road.
Still on the road.
In those few years that you went from, I guess, releasing it, it being new, people not really being familiar with the design, what was going on in management discussions or discussions between you and Sarah, thinking, you know, you had a beautiful design here, but it's new and it's different. And maybe you might have known that you had something there, but the public might need a little bit of time to catch up.
You know, it's really interesting when you launch different products. It's like the first 2 years, 3 years, you really know if you have a product or not. And it continued to grow and climb every year for a long time. And so you knew that. You just saw the momentum in the marketplace. The consumers saw that and wanted it.
Can you think back to an example of a specific instance that you think and you go, you know what, that was the time that I had hope? That there were signals that you really had something.
Well, you know, there were so many other things going on. It was like you can't stand still, and you always have to be looking at where the market's going with new designs, new development in different spaces. And so, you know, as we look at the brands of products that we have with PowerTap, Cyclops, Cirrus, Bike Fixation, you know, we wanted strategically to diversify our business in the bicycle marketplace. So it's like legs of the stool, right? And we wanted to have different businesses that would support each other, both in terms of markets, but also in the seasonality of the business. You look at racks, it's counter-seasonal to trainers. And our goal with manufacturing in the Madison, you know, at the time, the labor rate was really tight, like it is today. It's 2% unemployment in Madison. It's crazy right now.
Tough to find people at that.
It is, but we needed to maintain our employment of our key people. We couldn't, you know, we had a very seasonal business. And so Cyclops enabled us to have a more counter-seasonal business, which really helped blossom the business to be able to do a lot of different things.
At what point did Cyclops come in and level that out? Does 99 sound right? Late Could 90s?
Be. Yeah, late 90s.
Yeah?
Yeah. And so we were looking for things for a long time. You know, we'd make, you know, it's really hard from a business standpoint on seasonal business. You know, there's cost of operations you want to maintain, and you need the revenue to support that. And, you know, maintaining our workforce was really key. You know, we wanted to make sure our team was together, and how do you do it in a way that is profitable and you can support the tribe, right?
Yeah. Speaking about the tribe, the few interactions that I've had with the company, they all seem to have call it, I guess there's a tribe vibe that you've developed, that everyone kind of has a similar take that seems like they love the sport, but everyone's really humble, really approachable, friendly to deal with. That doesn't happen by accident in a company, especially the size of 200 employees. You've got to be pretty intentional about that. What have you done over the years that fosters that same culture?
People that are arrogant don't last long in our business.
Simple as that.
No, I just hate people that are arrogant personally. It just, maybe there's a better way to say that, but it's just, it's really important that, you know, we have, we're good at listening to other people and we are thoughtful in our response. We've done mindfulness training at our company. Richie Davidson from the Mindfulness Center at UW has come and helped our team learn mindfulness and meditation.
Really?
And through that, it's really helped us. It gives you a pause, right? When you're really thinking, it's, we need to be better listeners, better communicators, and better at kind of trying to understand what somebody else is saying.
So you've really hit on something that I'm into now. About a year and a half ago, I started meditating every day, going through a kind of a stressful time in my career. And I found that I couldn't calm myself down.
Yeah.
Like I felt buzzy and just figured it could only help.
Well, we're all anxious in different ways. And it's just like, it's really important for us to be honest with each other. And sometimes conflict is really hard. And it's really being mindful in how you say what you need to say in a way that's not offensive, but is thoughtful in a response.
So let's hear, what is a daily practice for you that fosters your mindfulness?
Well, it's just like, to me, it's breathing. It's just, it's moments of time during the day. And, I do, core training every day, and it's being really thoughtful and mindful of what I'm doing and how to maintain a certain body structure or position, and being very deliberate about things and just closing my eyes and thinking hard before I respond, or being really thoughtful and in the moment and present. And what's going on?
Do you have a daily meditation?
Well, there's different ones, but probably a body scan. If I was going to do anything and try and fall asleep, I'd try and do a body scan.
That's a good one.
I don't know if you've done that or not. And so,
a body scan after a hard run, actually, where you're already kind of beat up. That's one of my favorites.
And so we're working on some content for our people about meditation and the bicycle. And so we think there's value there. And a lot of times, you are meditating on the bike. You call it something different, but you're in deep thought about what's going on and just your, everybody trains and works out. You talk about the tribe people, hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to swim. I'm going to bike. I'm going to run. The thing that we haven't developed is a society of training our brain, right? The most important part of who you are is being able to be insightful, understanding, be of clear of mind when you're making comments or trying to respond in an appropriate way in stressful situations or not. Just you want to be present. There's so many times in the life that you don't listen and you're not present. And it's really important for our people at work to be present in what they're doing, being mindful of the task.
Yeah, not just getting in that habit of stimulus, here's how I react. Because if you're doing that, I found that in my case, sure, I thought I was being really thoughtful and articulate, but everyone thinks that they're thoughtful and articulate. And then when you look back on it, you think, or I thought, I was really just reacting and I was letting this, what do they call it? The lizard brain, the primordial, like how we've evolved that reaction, that half second where your emotions are taking over and you can't think. That's where you're actually responding.
That's where meditation
from.
Will really help, yeah. Right? If you take that moment of pause, if you do that pause before you respond, so you're thinking through your answer, you'll be happier with the way you've handled the situation.
Yeah.
You'll feel more fulfilled versus mad at yourself for opening your mouth before you thought through what the answer should be.
Yeah. Do you like to do your meditation morning, afternoon, evening, throughout?
If I had my choice, I'd do it in the morning. And so it happens throughout the day.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm just, I try to make it more than a daily practice. I'm trying to integrate that to my daily, what I do every moment of the day.
Hmm.
And it's just not meditating. It's being mindful of what the heck I'm going to say or how I'm going to approach and not overreact and not and react in a way that provides leadership guidance for where we're trying to do.
Mm.
What we're trying to do.
Mark Allen, triathlete, he said we're actually doing a podcast with him. And he was talking about how mindfulness should be a part of everyone's workout. Because if you can train your brain not to get into that rut when things get hard of, oh, this hurts, I'm not going to do well, what's my time going to be, I'm losing my pace, and you can recognize that that's just the primordial side of your brain that's taking over, and you can actually incorporate meditation into your workouts, that you'll be a better triathlete for it, because you'll learn how to deal with the pain. You'll learn that, ah, that's just my brain chatter going on. And I had a light bulb moment when he was mentioning that. And I go, you know what? Here I am. I'm doing a video every single day. And I'm saying that triathlon should be part of your life. And it shouldn't be just this thing that you do sometimes on the weekend or in the evening, that it should be incorporated into your just daily ongoings, a lifestyle. And here I am practicing meditation, but it's off on the side. And it's something that I do for 10 minutes in the morning, but I wasn't incorporating it the same way that you're talking about just throughout the day. That's
really taking it from practice to putting it in play, right? You can practice that. And that's really good in terms of training your brain and from a brain development. See, Richie Davidson got famous for brain imaging and showing that through meditation, you can change your image, you can change your brain. And the Dalai Lama wrote Richie Davidson a check for proving out that it's true, that through mindfulness and meditation, you can change your brain.
In what way?
For me to explain the scientific change that's going on in the brain, I would do it a disjustice. But you need to go online and look at Richie Davidson, his program and how he's done that. And
you know what I'll do is I'll find some research from some content from Richie Davidson, and I'll link it up in the show notes. So we're directing anyone who listens so that they can actually go and see.
So we supported Richie and his team, and we helped do this, and we're working with schools in Madison, and how do we, they're working in the Madison schools, and we're working with other schools on how they can take these lessons learned and apply it to the kids at school on how to be mindful in what they're doing.
Okay.
And so it's really happening. It's a big deal right now.
Were you into this mindfulness and meditation right from the start?
When we brought mindfulness into our business, we brought it to our leadership team, and we're like, and it's more about its application of business. It's a life-changing exercise and it can make a big difference in your life if you take advantage of training your brain.
Have you incorporated actual processes in the business to foster that?
Well, we've done other mindfulness training when we've taken it down a layer into our company. And so we continue to bring that to our organization at different levels during work.
Okay. For example,
We have meetings. We've had a couple retreat meetings where we've led with meditation and mindfulness at the beginning of the meeting. And we've had, there was one meeting, it was the best meeting we ever had because everybody was open to each other after we went through this mindfulness training.
Do you see that starts coming out in the end products that you get?
Sure. I think it's really important for us that we need to be more intellectual in the way we approach solutions, and we need to dig deep inside ourselves to get those answers, right? Whether it's out in the market, the marketplace, or inside our organization.
Very interesting. That's good. I could geek out about this for a long time, but that might be another podcast, some sort of a meditation guru podcast that can keep up with it. I'm a total newbie at it, more or less.
You know, we have a responsibility to our people. It's doing the right thing. How do we develop our people as a whole person, right? Not just on the business side, right? It's a big, it's big.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to some of the products. So you had the Cyclops that came out, and I guess you started like broadening into different categories, specifically by buying businesses from the looks of it, as opposed to starting new categories within the same business. Is that right?
That's correct.
Why, from a business standpoint, former business school grad, not just a guy that wears wetsuits and Speedos all day, I got a big question about, like, why buy businesses as opposed to build?
It's kind of one thing leads to another, right? And so the buy versus build, if you have an established business with established product and established market, they access to entry is a lot quicker, and the ability to enter a market, you can move quickly when you acquire something than build a business over time. But it's buying the right business for the right reason. It's just not any business.
Yeah. What were the tactics that you used to make sure you were getting the right business?
Well, it's a lot of interviews. It's a lot of research, both on the consumer side, business partners, technology, evaluating the product.
Have you had
patent people who are looking at the patents? We know the market, and these are all adjacent to where we're at, right? That we're developing product or buying product that's in our space or adjacent to where we're at.
Have you had one? I mean, from the outside, it seems like it was just a straight, you know, uphill climb, or I guess that makes it sound hard. But it seems like everything was all rosy, that you buy a business, come out with a great product, it's successful, move on to the next product, buy a business, go on to the next product. Was it always as smooth as that?
Well, I'm glad it looks that way from the outside.
it
you
does.
Know, the thing is, in buying businesses, you're always surprised by different things, and they all change. I think our core beliefs in doing the right thing have paid off for us in a big way. When we bought Cyclops, they had a lot of product in the marketplace that didn't operate as promised. We fulfilled those promises. And we, you know, created loyal people that believed in us because we did the right thing on that with them.
So what was that example that Cyclops had?
Well, Cyclops, when they were... So we manufacture in-house, and we're controlling all kind of what goes into the product. But Cyclops had a fluid trainer, and they had contracted to a third party to assemble these products without any QC, quality control. And so they were filling the body of the fluid trainer too full, and when it would heat up, it would expand and blow out the seals.
And you'd have leaking fluid on.
Yeah, you'd
on
have
the
leaking fluid because it had nowhere to go. And so we had to. We had to meter all of that. We put a total control on it, and so we understood the capacity, and we improved the seals and the connectability, and the spec of the material, and how full is full, and just. So we, you know, it was a way to really do the right thing and take care of the product and the customers out there out in the marketplace, and we were rewarded by that.
Was there a question of how you're going to deal with that as you started seeing?
No, if we're going to buy this company and not do the right thing, it's like it was a wasted move, right?
You're going to take all the warts that come along with the
you
company.
You
got to
do that if you're
going
to win. You know, if you're going to do the right thing, there's no choice.
And how did that play out in the end?
Well, we became the number one brand of trainers in North America and have held that for a long time.
And all by doing the right thing. So can you...
Well, that's part of it though, but in doing the right thing is taking care of them, but fixing it, right? So it's, if we get the call, we're going to take care of it. And so we're paying for that, right? And so we got to make sure that the product is right when it enters the marketplace.
Was that a point of contention at all in the management company?
Absolutely everyone
was on board that we're gonna eat this cost.
Yep.
Really? How do you develop that with your management team? That
they get it, right? And so they understand. you know, you're rewarded if you do things in the right way. If you try and act in a way that isn't consistent with how you want to be treated as a consumer out there, you're not going to be you're going to be a company that isn't able to move forward in the marketplace long term, right? It just, to me, you don't have a choice. We get calls from New York and all these people on the East Coast questioning, what do you mean by I'll take care of you? And we're like, if you got a problem, we own it, we're going to replace it. That's what it means.
they're not used to being,
you know, it's like, hey, we own it, we're responsible for it. It's not the bike shop problem, it's our problem, we're going to own it. It's just like,
yeah, they're not used to that stand-up business attitude.
No, it's not.
No.
And so we haven't done a lot of marketing, a lot of consumer marketing. It's a lot of been word of mouth. And
that's interesting. What would be, I guess, can you think back to some forks in the road that, you know, you go down to the Interbike bike floor and I don't know, maybe 30% of the companies that are down there right now aren't going to be around 3-4 years from now. Were there some decisions that you can look back on over the years and say, you know what, I could have gone this way or that way? And they were the pivotal decisions that you made that have allowed you to be around for coming up to almost 30 years.
You know, we're not perfect at what we do. We've made mistakes along the way. You'd like to be able to kind of redo those, but you can't.
So what are some examples of that?
You know, I don't live in the past. I'm not totally risk adverse. I'm willing to take some risk. And if we make mistakes, we need to move on and attack. And one of the things we have as a culture is, how do we work things out? How do we figure things out? There's always problems that you face. And so we have an ability to do some internal problem solving, to work through the problems and come up with solutions on how to get things done.
Are there structural ways that you've implemented that you're able to share?
So we have a report called the Black Mark Report. And the Black Mark Report is when we have issues with our product in the marketplace. And this report is something that I created years ago. And my opinion is, if things aren't right in the marketplace, we get a black mark against this.
And how is this determined by?
It's determined by calls our customer service get.
Okay.
On product that a consumer may have an issue or a problem with.
And one phone call determines a black mark, or is that a number?
So I don't know. It depends on the call, right? Some is like, it depends. If they're trying to look for more information about what's going on and there's things that they're trying to figure out, we don't mark ourselves against that. We're trying to help them find solutions and how things work, whether it's a pedal sinking or, but when things aren't working right, we want to track that. And so through that reporting process, we have regular meetings that we're talking about things. And if there's clusters of things that happen, it's got our attention.
Okay, so you're looking for trends of consistent things that are coming up.
Like if one-ups, we don't worry about. But if there's something that, you know, it's just whatever, it just comes up, we're paying attention to that. That's kind of our first line of understanding things that may happen in the marketplace with our products that we want to be on.
And then where does it go from there?
Well, we have a corrective action notice that we put in place that is kind of rapid fire, and we kind of triangulate around what that is, and we work to resolve it and fix it and move on.
Okay. I want to take things way, way back. Interesting thing that I found out was you first started riding bikes and developing a love for bikes as a paper boy.
That's correct. That was my first job. And it was funny, I was in fifth grade at that time, and I had a paper route with my sister, Jill, and we delivered 150 papers in the morning, and we made 25 cents per paper per month, which wasn't a lot, but we didn't have a lot, so everything counted, right? And so the hard part, when I was riding with all these papers in the basket in the winter in Chicago, and I'd spill it, and, you know, I didn't have a lot of fond memories of being on the bike when things like that were happening.
No, when you get a flat tire and you got to change it in the way, I feel your pain up in Winnipeg.
It was more the ice and the snow that were like,
did you have
not
the,
fun.
Well, did they even have studded tires back then?
No, they didn't.
No, so you're slipping and sliding all over the place? How do you, one thing that I say is that there are few things in life that are as fun as an adult as it was when you're 5 years old, and bike riding is one of them.
Right.
Does this feel like a job to you?
You know, I love what I do. I love the business. I love the people. And so it's part of my life. And so it's not a job, right? And so I come to work. I'm excited about what's going on. Connecting with people at the show here. Just, you know, there's a lot of friends in the industry. I probably have more friends in the industry than I do outside the industry. And, you know, today's with the changing marketplace and what's being transformed and kind of consumers' path to purchase. You know, it's really transforming the business today. And there's a lot of great independent bike shops out there that they have knowledge and insights that can help the consumers and people that listen to you. And they should take full advantage of that.
Talk about how that is changing right now.
Well, the consumer's path to purchase, you know, it's just they're choosing other ways to go and get product and buy product. And so our thing is, hey, buy local, support your local economy and your local shop wherever you can, and go experience and be part of the cycling culture.
Mm. Is that a challenge on your end that so many people are going to Amazon, or does it make a difference to you?
It makes a big difference to us. You know, it just, the consumers will drive kind of where the future of the business is going. And when you look at bike shops and kind of that they're there and how important they are to the future of cycling, I think buying local does a lot for maintaining this network of cycling, the cycling community that will be lost when you don't support these guys.
From the aspect of having a connection to the local people around you and people to ride with and a hub to meet at?
Well, there's advocacy. You know, they, in some of these dealers, they're advocating for cycling in their marketplace. They're doing rides out of the marketplace, and they support the needs of cyclists. But the true bike shops, they're the hub of what's going on in the cycling community in their local markets, and some do an exceptional job at that and take it really seriously and love the bike and want to make a difference with the bike.
What are some of the things that you're able to do as a company that has so many connections across the entire, I guess, world?
Well, one of the things we've done for the last, I don't know, 12, 13 years, maybe 14 years, is we've done an event in Madison for the Bicycle Federation of Wisconsin, and we've raised over $1 million for them in their local market to try and influence kind of what's happening for the site, make sure that the cyclist rights are heard and that they're doing work on the behalf of the cyclist.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know that you're heavily into bicycle advocacy.
Well, the bicycle and riding your bike it can make a big difference in the world today. We've brought from Madison a number of years ago, we took city leaders from our city to study the best practices in the world. And we went to a sister city in Germany called Munster, Germany. And when you looked at kind of bike share, mode share by bicycle was 35%. 35% of the people would ride bikes versus public transportation or cars. And it was rated as the number one most livable city in the world. And a lot had to do with health, but also mental health. Mm. And riding your bike can be, you know when you look at, you know, people that are dealing with depression and other things, but being physically fit and riding your bike makes a big difference.
Right.
And so, you know, when you look at the bike, it can, you know, you look at greenhouse gases and CO2 emissions, and the bike can, you're not doing any of that and you're getting physically fit. And You know, there's nothing like being in a bike and riding a bike down the road and being part of what's happening real time.
Yeah. Well, I always say that when I get, say, honked at, because I commute year round, winter, summer, everything. When I get honked at, people in cars are angry at me. I say, all right, let's take things to their logical conclusion. If everyone in the world had their own car and nobody carpooled, nobody did anything, greenhouse gas emissions would be high, waste would be high, people wouldn't be getting healthy, it's not mentally good for you. If everyone in the world rode bikes, what would happen? Healthcare costs would go down, mental health would go up, fitness would increase, probably enjoyment would go up, congestion on the roads would go down, all good things. But somehow it's not a bike-friendly world, at least in my city it's not, and I think that's kind of the case in North America. And that sounds like a lot of the things that you're working on with the advocacy work that you do. Are you trying to bring a lot of the things that are seen out in Europe that you hear about with those livable cities to North America?
And we are. We're a member of People for Bikes, which is an organization in the United States that's industry network of people that are trying to create safe places for people to ride their bike and taking these jump cities that where they're at to the future of being able to provide safe places for people to ride their bike. My thing is, how do we create safe places for people to get around from point to point? And mixing it with traffic doesn't necessarily get it done.
Mm-hmm.
It, for sure, we got to find independent, separated spaces for cyclists and cars and pedestrians like they do in Europe. You know, it's just, that's the only way to really provide that. And there are cities that are doing that.
In North America?
Yeah, there are. Madison, Wisconsin, Boulder, Colorado, Davis, California, Portland just raised, the state of Oregon just raised, they're going to tax themselves and raise $100 million for bicycle infrastructure. One state, $100 million. And so there's Austin, Texas, Memphis, Tennessee. There's a lot of cities that equate bike friendliness to quality of life, and as they're fighting for businesses to move to their cities, people want to move to different cities that have high quality of lives.
What's the laundry list of all the organizations that you're supporting? We might be here for about 20 minutes for, I think. Can't even
Boys and Girls Club in Madison, People for Bikes, you know, Bike Texas, Wisconsin Bicycle Federation. I don't know. There's a bunch of them out there. But where there's needs and we can make it fit and work, we try and help whoever we can.
What are some of the ways that people themselves can contribute to bike advocacy?
I think the big thing is when they have local meetings and local hearings about bicycles or what's going on in their local community and they want to become more bicycle friendly, they got to show up and just talk to people. You have a lot of people that listen to you that are very influential in the communities that they live. You know, people that are doing triathlons are very, you know, you're dealing with a lot of professional people that mm-hmm. are well integrated in the cities and the communities that they live. And if they want to create a better place to ride a bike, they have the ability to connect with people in the city, the county, or on a province or state level. And they just have to talk to them and tell them, hey, I ride a bike too. It's not right or left. It's about, hey, creating safe places for people to ride their bike.
Yeah. Aren't there some studies out there that say that for every, call it 10 cents invested in bike infrastructure, a dollar comes back over the remaining 20 years versus?
I don't know. I think there's studies that are done, and I can send this to you. That show that through health and wellness, the ability of movement, it's billions of dollars in getting people from sitting or being not active to being active, whether you're riding a bike or walking. We're not talking about pennies or dollars. You look at the medical costs. In Canada, you're different because of social medicine. In the United States, it's absolutely out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to impact that by being healthy and taking care of yourself is so meaningful. And as a society, if we can create places for people to be active, it will be very influential on kind of long-term outcomes of obesity in kids.
Let's talk, like, start working towards wrapping it up here. What are the...
Good. Say, what I'm are tired. The, you warm, you warm been, me
I've
out.
Been,
I'm
ex- I've been peppering you with good ones here. What are the few, I guess, innovations that you've got that you're most excited about, or the innovations and directions that you're seeing in the industry?
So you can kind of almost go product by product, you know, what we're seeing or what we're trying to do. And if you want to start with power or indoor training with Cyclops or racks, you know, on the power side, it's whether it's the pedal, the hub, or the crank, the chain ring, it's about being able to fit more products, right? You know, it's the shoe interface. We want to make sure that we are as robust as we could be there.
What do you mean by the shoe interface? Sorry.
Where you're putting your cleats onto the pedal.
Oh, okay.
Oh. The cleat interface with the pedal.
Instead of just being a place to clip into your bike.
Well, we're just mindful of, and so we're looking at the pain points of any product that we have and try and eliminate them. That's one of the things that we're doing, kind of communication, how we're communicating. We look at the indoor training and the smart technology and the ability to be able to interact, you know, and, you know, you have the ability to go out and ride a ride, record the ride, re-ride that ride, record that ride on your power tap pedal or hub or whatever, take that ride, replicate that ride on an indoor trainer. Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah. Perfectly.
Yeah.
We're every sitting, single time.
Sitting 6 feet away from a 6 foot TV screen with Zwift on it. And that's becoming so much more common. It's not just going out for a ride or
Zwift indoors. Does an amazing job. I love to see what they have going on. But we're able to take the outside ride and bring it inside. And really, if you look at the research and you're training for an event or getting ready for an event, you're more efficient in training indoors than you are outdoors. So your triathletes that are struggling with the ability to fit everything in together, you can be more efficient in riding and working inside than you can outside. And you can, when it comes to the ride, you can experience exactly, if you're going to do a try somewhere, good likelihood you can take what we have and through the different technology and re-ride that ride every time to get ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Get that exact actual course.
Right.
Yeah. That's really interesting. That's what I'm hearing from being out on the floor like you say, specifically for triathletes, because we're time crunched people. We've got three sports to worry about plus injuries. And most of them are older athletes that have a career, have kids. And to be able to take, say, in my case, take the half Ironman Austin course that I'm preparing for in a month and a half and ride that in my sunroom in Winnipeg for the next few weeks.
You'll know exactly when you're going to hit a hill and you'll be ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be surprised by anything. And so we got that going on in the trainers. And on the rack side, we're looking at the problems and how do you provide solutions that the consumers are looking for and accessing vehicles with bikes on hitch racks easily.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a new product coming out that solves some of that problem. And we're always looking at where the problems, you know, where's the white space in the marketplace when you're looking at for trying to fulfill the needs of the consumer. And we listen to the market. The good thing is we're cyclists too. So everybody in the company thinks they're a product manager. They always have product ideas.
Everyone's got an idea about how to fix it.
Right. Or what to do or what the next product is or where the opportunity is.
Yeah. Can I ask you, I don't know if this is proprietary information or not, but why is it that you've been able to figure out the PowerTap P1 pedals? And I talk about them all the time because they've just been nothing but a good experience. But the other pedals out there still, I don't know, for lack of a better word, a little bit janky. What is it that
Well, we have so much history with PowerTap, right? We're on our sixth generation of technology development in strain gauge technology. You know, each one of our pedals and Smart Trainer, we're calibrating in our business. Everyone that goes out is calibrated before it's shipped and tested. And so when you get it, we know that we've done this already, right?
Okay.
And so the consumer, it should be really easy. They should be able to take it out of the box, right? And put it on, and it works.
And it does.
Right, and it does, right? And so, you know, it, but it's not free, right? To do what we're doing, to go through individually calibrating everything that goes out. It takes, you know, it was upward to 40 minutes to calibrate pedals when we first introduced it. 40 minutes. On a calibration machine.
And how many were you shipping out every day?
Well, I don't know. We were working 16-hour days to get up to speed, and it just then we put in two calibration machines because we couldn't keep up with one.
And then you're down to 12-hour days, fortunately.
Well, I don't know. It just keeps up, but it's always being aware of, you know, how do you do it in a way that you're more efficient, more effective in getting things out the door in the right way.
Yeah. To wrap up here, last question, what would you say to triathletes out there, having been in the industry for so long, and a lot of the people that would be listening to this are very new to triathlon and hearing about how the triathlon industry works. Do you have any parting words for them?
Well, I think the products that we have, especially the people getting into it, the PowerTab specifically, if it's a tool, these are tools for you to use that'll help you achieve your goals, make you better as a cyclist, a rider, in the most time efficient way to do it. You look at PowerTab, and as a new guy entering it, it's really important to pay attention to your heart rate and your power. As your heart rate goes up and your power goes down, you're becoming more efficient.
Yeah.
You know, so you're, and so as that happens, when you become inefficient, it's the other way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do a test in a lot of my workouts that it's that heart rate versus power test. Right. And before I even get into the work of the workout, my coach is kind of giving me a test to know, like, all right, well, today you're a little bit smashed up and your heart rate was higher at that same power. Maybe you're not.
You want to be more efficient. You don't want to overtrain and undertrain. And, you know, the tri market, the people that are doing that are just, they're challenged by the time that it takes to be ready for the race. And we want to provide the tools to help them get there.
Yeah. Where can people check you out?
Go to our website, powertap.com, cirrus.com, cyclops.com.
We'll link it all up in the show
notes.
Yeah,
just come and just check it out. If you got any questions, just send us a note and we'll get back to you and try and help you any way we can.
They're good folk. You've got a great team, Chris.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, Trainiacs, I hope you dug that interview. Just a few things before you take off and get onto your next podcast. First off, if you want to get just the best Triathlon Terran stuff filtered for you every week, go to triathlonterran.com/thehits. Enter your email address, and every week, instead of having to sift through all the bad stuff to get to the good, we'll send you out a weekly email with our most popular YouTube video from the previous week, Instagram posts, spotting a podcast, or even some of the favorite gear that I'm trying out. Could be a book, could be some tech, whatever. If you enter your email address, we'll make it easy for you. Get to your best stuff every week by going to triathlonterran.com/thehits.
And next, if you want to support the show at all, you can go to triathlonterran.com and take your pick from a few things we've got there that you can work into your day-to-day training. We've got coaching plans if you are looking for one. We've got our awesome-looking Trainiac gear. And if you click through the Amazon banner ad or click on any of the products that we mention or link to, and you purchase anything at one of the affiliate sites like Amazon, it doesn't cost you anything extra, but we get a small commission. And of course, everything adds up and helps us a lot to keep this thing going.
And finally, if you want to get a shout out personally for your family members, Tri Club, whatever you want, leave a rating for us over on iTunes, good, bad, whatever. And in the next podcast, we'll shout out everyone who in the previous week gave us an iTunes podcast rating. That really helps us get discovered there. And if you want to give a shout out to anyone specifically, share the podcast with someone and CC me in at Taren, Taren, at triathlonterran.com, and send us the message that you want to send to your loved one, friend, family member,
most hated nemesis out on the tri course, whatever it is.